हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवास्तवि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so page 24. Thus, inference may be said to be a syllogism consisting of at least three categorical premises. But when one is analyzing the whole process of an inference, and especially when one is using inference to prove or demonstrate something, then it is necessary to state the inference in systematic and comprehensive chain of arguments. One must then state a syllogism in the form of five premises. These five premises of Avayavas that constitute a valid inference are pratigya, fact, hetu, reasons, udaharana, example, upanaya, application, and nigamana, conclusion. Here is an example. 1. John is mortal, fact. 2. Because he is a man, reason. 3. All men are mortal. For example, Napoleon, Lincoln, Socrates, and so on. I guess it's obvious because you knew about them dying. Maybe you should have said Lincoln, Socrates, JFK. 4. John is a man, application. 5. Therefore, John is mortal, conclusion. So you see, is that it's going back, is that you're connecting it back. Means you're giving your example. You know, because based on John is mortal, okay, because he is a man, and then you're proving that it connects. So at the fourth one, he is, you know, he's a man.
So the reason in the application in this case is the same, but because of what happened earlier, then it takes on a new.
Yes, it's kind of like you're going in one way and coming out. It's kind of reverses, and so that the middle part, that udaharana, is that where because. See, as you say something, there's not necessarily a great understanding of it. You know, then you're giving your reasons. There should be a little bit more understanding. But in the Udaharana, that's where the emphasis on the drishtanta aspect is there, right? But it's going to be the knowledge of it. That's the aspect of the drishtanta. So now that you have that knowledge, now we can discuss the point again. We revisit. But we're going to start from the practical.
Right.
Because from gyan goes into vigyan. Right? So that takes us to the fourth stage, which is the application or how it synthesizes and that. Then you can say, okay, so now you see the point. So the conclusion is now the point is there, you appreciate the point. So it's there. But that drishtanta, if that doesn't happen, the whole thing doesn't work. You've said the point, you have to get that understanding. So these others are techniques to go about it. But you only get them if you see it if you're able to appreciate. Therefore, the example. The example is trying to bring it to the person. You know, what you're trying to say through an example to the person. Right? And then they've caught that. Now, because of that, so, okay, another way you could see is that we, from before what was mentioned, and that would be, okay, John is immortal, okay, that's the fact, that because he's a man, reason, all men are mortal, for example, Napoleon, like that, and so on. And then, similarly, John being a man, you know, then, therefore John is mortal. So that similarly, that, because now you, that's also the Udaharana, now you bring it together. Does that make sense?
So in the context of this one's just nyaya. For our context, we call nigama the conclusion. We also quote shastric authority.
Yes.
So in this case, we could also quote shastric authority, but this is just a logical presentation of man being mortal, not necessarily the, you know, scriptural authority of it. And some people don't accept that.
You're just saying that's why Prabhupada would use in Bhaktivinoda Kura Bhakti Sanda, they would use logic a lot because people don't necessarily accept Shastra.
Mm.
So you make the point.
Right.
Then they'll go through this process to convince them using the logic and contemporary examples that they can relate to.
Right.
Right? And then once they've done that, then they would bring it that and then bring it back to the scriptural.
So we do both, but basically, we focus on scriptural as the most important, but we use the examples in order to reach.
Yes, yes, and then you can cook up this.
And so, this five, they follow all the four pramanas. So, it's inbuilt in it, I think we come across.
We had the chart before. We saw that chart, didn't it?
No, all these five. Avayavas, how they connect to the pramanas, the four pramanas.
Yeah, no, we saw there was a chart, wasn't there?
It was what they accept.
Who accepts what pramanas, not that one, Maharaj. How the five avayavas, they connect to the pramanas.
So
which praman? I think it comes a little later when we describe about the avayavas.
Oh.
So there, it's not like we are trying to put or anything. It is already like that. Each avayava, like the example, is the udaharana, is the pratyaksha, and reason, and construction.
Here it is. Each of the five propositions, this is page 11, each of the five propositions, namely pratigya, etc., with which the desired thesis is conclusively established, siddhi, pari, samapyate, is called component of inference, avayava. The four pramanas are collectively present in these five components. I think that's also why Gotama keeps four, right? Mm-hmm. It means for us, it's just an extension of it's three. But this one becomes a prominence in the fourth one becomes a prominence in the unfolding of the inference, the logical reasoning. So the solemn declaration of the purpose of the treatise, Pratigya, as founded on verbal testimony, Shabda Praman. So that should go back to the Shastra. You're saying something that is Shastra with that. Then reasons, hate to express supporting the thesis through the method of inference, Anuman. Right, you're going to show some kind of inference there, like that. Then, examples, udaharana, are given to illustrate the facts, bringing one to direct perception, pratyaksha of the thesis, right? Because that, when they come to that point, then that drishtanta happens that they kind of understand what you're talking about. The theme is then brought near, upanaya, to the conclusion, reached by knowledge of similarity through comparison, upamana. So that's why you see many times Prabhupada says similarly. Or sometimes it'll be a therefore or a thus.
Right.
But you're saying you have this, therefore that. You know, you're showing that just as the sun, god, sun, planet, sunshine, this and that, explain all that. Similarly, then the living entities like the sunshine, Krishna is like the sun, you know, God like this and so. Is that?
So it's like the summary before the conclusion.
Yes, it's just bringing it all together. That's why it's upanaya. It means you're bringing it near. That you've already brought out the knowledge, but now you're bringing it to the vigyan, where it has the application. That's where you said application, that you see it's vigyan, not necessarily it's a practical, mechanical application. But then you're seeing is that, okay, all this is there, it's close. Okay, now I have that knowledge, but what has that got to do with this? And so now you bring that back, but it'll go technically a bit back more to the reasoning. You know, and then you'll have your conclusion.
Also, that the last aspect of the conclusion is all the four are present in it.
Mm.
The demonstration of the capability of all these components and pramanas to combine for the sake of establishing one central thesis is the conclusion.
Ah, okay. So that gives the flavor, the difference between, even though technically according to the rule, the Pratigya and the Nigamana can be exactly the same sentence, but it's got to be that when you present it in the fifth,
it has all the four.
Yes. It has the that all aspects in it. That's where you see Prabhupada. Sometimes it's very similar, but a lot of times those would be bringing, showing practical and all things like that. So since the fourth one has that practical element, then therefore the fifth one would have.
Just like when you have the attraction for Krishna, it is Rati. But then when it mixes with all ingredients, then it becomes Rasa, that what you can taste. Similarly, it's already the Siddhanta, but when you have the Pratyaksha and Anumana and Upamana, everything together mixed with it, then it becomes like a solid, conclusive thing. That's what is the master, that he has the faith or the, what you call, the Uttamadhikari. The Madhyamadhikari has full faith in the scriptures, but he may not be able to explain it. But the Uttamadhikari is the one who can do the other three, so that he can bring everybody else also to the same conclusion.
Yes.
The Pratigya is, both the Madhyamadhikari and the Madhyamadhikari, they have.
Yeah. Very nice. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's very... In others, it's one of these things that when you're dealing with these great personalities, they've come, so it's not just he came up with an idea, therefore there's six schools. No, he's presenting the essence of the Veda according to this perspective. Right? Because in their mind they're coming to a conclusion. So it's that, it gives it has that essence, but it's not necessarily that is getting to the actual essence of the Veda of pure devotional service. But at least on the aspects of knowledge or the mechanics, then it will be it'll be really essential points. So as soon as you're getting down to the essential points, those principles, then they are, having the universal. That means all details have to be within them. That's why you see in different places the same thing is described in many different ways. But it's not that it's different, it's adding another aspect or another layer or another, faculty maybe?
Facet.
Another facet to what's going on. So this is trying to broaden your understanding. But because we want just one definition and that's it. But that one definition has to be one that will work in all situations. So they give, but we don't understand how it applies. And then with time, we start to catch and see how it goes. Like we said with the Drishtanta, he gave his example. It's always talked about as example, but it's not the example. It's only Drishtanta if the example gets you to understand it. So the point where you understand it, that's Drishtanta, not the example. Right? Like you use a frying pan to get something to be fried. But only when it's... Just because you put it in the frying pan, it's not fried. It's only when it comes to that point where it's fried, then it's fried. Right? Yeah. Before that. Yes. Yeah. Does that make sense? So the same way the example, it's not that you gave the example, is that you got the result of them understanding what you're talking about from the example. When you say something and people are going, oh, that's Drishtanta. The example wasn't, it's the tool to attain Drishtanta. But then you see is that it continues, right? You set the point. The reasoning should start the process of Drishtanta. The example should bring it more. And then you have an understanding. The Upanaya should now give you more of a realization of this practical application, in other words, the science of it. Right? And then the conclusion, then that would be the most complete. So then you have now proper. So you see, it's just developing through. So unless you get that understanding, what's the point? right? Even as that. Because if Siddhanta, you've said conclusion, you stated, but the person didn't understand it, what's the point of your speaking? Other than it purifies the atmosphere and that they don't have the ability to understand it, what can you do? But you should be trying, like Prabhu was saying before, it's about that rope. Is you said it, the example, it only partly got, well, you know, you have to keep going until you find the right example. Is that drishtanta has to happen. So that's the thing, is for us, vidyana is the real thing. Jnana is simply the first step. You have something to work with. Like that. But until you get realization, then, you know, it's just like, if you accept religion, that means that there's rules and regulations. Why? Because, you know, we're not the body, we're the soul. Right? So you have to regulate because you're trying to come to the platform of that. When you understand, okay, I'm not the body and the soul, now I work on these platforms. I use the support of religion, but it's about me, the soul, doing things. That's vidyana. Right? So that's vidyana boy. That's what's happening at that point. So just to say, oh, we're not the body, Prabhu, and then give a political application, that's not vidyana. Right? Does that make sense? That's just politics. So therefore you're trying to get through. So that's the difficulty. We have no understanding of the mechanics or how the mechanics work, what's their purposes. So the quickest, easiest thing to catch is the mechanics. And that's why then some people will seemingly be very good at logic, but actually they're not. You know, so that's your context of the modern rhetoric. Is technically you're good at logical presentations, but you're not, because you don't get the Siddhanta, you only know how to win arguments. Because the modern context, rhetoric, is how to win arguments. It's not actually how to come to find out the absolute truth. Right? But the point is if you can poke holes in somebody else's till it falls apart, then you're left with the truth. Rather than, no, you actually understand what the thing is. So it's just like in the material world, if I get rid of pain, I have pleasure. What's left, I remove the pain, what's left is pleasure. When it's not, it's actually just a neutral state. So the same way as you have some presentation of ignorance, I poke holes in it until it falls apart. What I'm left with, I call knowledge. When actually it's not. Knowledge means about Krishna. Just like happiness means in connection with Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Existence is in connection with Krishna. So, therefore, just on the platform of karma, it's an illusion. Also on the platform of jnana, it's an illusion. It's the same illusion. They don't go past the sambandha and abhideya, because prayojana is Krishna. So they make it that if I have a nice situation and I operate that situation to improve the situation, I will call that success. I'm an intelligent person, practical person. I'm a person who has, I'm enjoying, I'm a success. But actually, they never can deal with the Ananda aspect. That's why people are dissatisfied. But they come to amazing, so like Lord Brahma, how much does he know and how much does he control? I mean, that's way beyond anybody's context. Right? You know, I mean, one, you need four heads, because you see all the time when you have the standard trope where they ask the aliens that I want to know all knowledge, and so then they give it to them. That they literally, every time, their head explodes. And they're freaking, no more, no more. Like that. So he has four heads. So in other words, don't try to know everything unless you have four heads. Right? Know your limits. So therefore, we know Krishna. If you know Krishna, you know everything. We don't need all those facts and figures to be stuffed in our head. Only how much actually fits with our nature to engage in Krishna service. And that's all the more you need to know. Otherwise, you're like the scholar on the boat with the boatman. You know, like that. It's great knowledge, but then...
Since he has wasted 100% of his life.
Yeah. It's like that, yeah. So basically, he's on the same platform as the boat. Because the boat will go down, he'll go down, fishermen will swim back. Then he'll come later with another boat, drag his boat out of the water, and then he'll continue, but the other guy will I mean, yeah, if you'll have done the welfare work of feeding the fish. So, yeah. So, do we understand here there's going to be two aspects, just like let's say before when we were explaining on the Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, on the mechanics, that when you're dealing with Sankarshan Prajumna Anirudha and Vasudev, you're dealing with the mechanical aspect of how it works. Right? So, that mechanics, you getting a result, so in one sense you could say the result, we'll call it Prayojana, but it's not real Prayojana, because it's just the result of the work. Right? So, therefore, there's a situation, I have knowledge of that situation, I apply that knowledge of the situation, and I get a result in that situation. Right? So, that will be taken, that's your modern success theory. It means they don't know that, but that's what it is. They'll never use all four parts. Right? So then, but the actual point is, in observing that field, there's a natural inspiration. Right? Performing the activity, there's a furtherance of that, and you get the result and the taste that's from there. That's actually why people work. If that's understood, people would change how they work. Because now, they'll do anything to get the result, even if it means destroying everything that they wanted the result for. Like Duryodhana, he wants to be the king and enjoy everything, but he's not seeing that by having this war, there's going to be nothing left. It means at minimum, he's hoping, at least there'll be him. You know, even better as if, you know, at least Dushasana's there, you know, someone to talk to, him, the karna, like that. But he doesn't realize everything will be destroyed. So even though, yes, he would be the emperor, but the emperor of what? Arjuna is able to see that. That's the difference. When you're setting the scene, means we'll look at it, setting the scene just means, okay, there's these guys there, and this one's on this side and that. No, you're setting the scene of what is Duryodhana's mentality, what is Arjuna's mentality. That's the real scene. Right? Does that make sense? So when you say someone's making a scene, it's about the emotions and the thought, not about necessarily what they're doing. Right? That you use other terms.
So Duryodhana is impious, Arjuna is pious, but then Krishna is transcendental.
Yes, exactly. So that's the thing, is that you've already brought the situation where Duryodhana represents what's going on in the material world, in general, how people apply it. You know, the dog eat dog, right? Arjuna is then applying it on the pious level. No, there's duties and that, and you have to do this. What's the point without the relationships and all that? But it's still material. Then, with the explanation of the Gita, then it comes to the transcendental. That's why you can't get upset, well, actually, you know, Krishna, Arjuna in the beginning was right, and that, you know, you have this battle and all that. That means that's what Prabhupada talks about. Read Gita and then come up with your own theory. Then what was the point of Krishna speaking? If Arjuna is already right, then why have the rest of the Gita? So, in other words, devotees like that, when they teach Gita, should only teach the first chapter of Gita up to the point where Arjuna says, you know, what is it, ends with, you know, what's it, oh, Govinda, I cannot fight, or something. He sits down. They should stop their class there and not go any further. They should introduce it that we're simply dealing with, you know, the thing should be first chapter of Gita, you know, like that, you know, an in-depth study of, you know, how you say, Arjuna's material piety. Like that. And then, you know, and then do the course like that. Don't claim that you're dealing with either of these. Because that's not what it's for. That's setting the scene. So Mahabharata is all about, you know, all the politics and this and that. So here you're taking it, he's the topmost you can get of that. Then you're taking it beyond. So that's the whole trick, is everybody's gone and read the whole thing up to that point, you know. And so then you're going to have the Gita. You know, then they're going to have a better understanding. Then naturally you've read all that. Well, what happens after that? So they'll read the rest of the Mahabharata. You don't have to worry. I mean, so if you put this in the beginning, people would not have read the Mahabharata. You know, if you put it at the end, they would not read it. So you put it like, you know, the right place so people will read up to there, be inspired, and then the momentum they'll go through the Gita. Okay, wow, okay. And then continue reading.
It's funny because if you're just looking at the detail of it, you're not looking at the principle. One might argue, well, Duryodhana was right because, you know, he agreed with Krishna that the war had to be had. But it was his consciousness. He was in material consciousness.
Yes.
Arjuna had spiritual consciousness, but it was misapplied because he had Krishna right next to him telling him what to do. He's, you know, presenting these different pious excuses.
Right.
And so, yeah, he was wrong at the time, but the thing was then, you know, once he understood, he fought for the right reason instead of fighting for the
wrong reason. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, he's easily confused to see that, well, see, look, Arjuna's arguing the whole time. You know, he should have just did what Duryodhana was doing. He was going to fight. He was already surrendered. In one sense.
Well, he is Kali Raj, so that the demigods do follow the Lord. But,
because in our material conditioning, that's what we're used to. We focus on the detail. It's like, well, is this right or wrong?
Yeah.
What do I do in this case?
Yeah.
And then we want just the answer. We don't want to know why. We just want to know what we're meant to do.
And it has to be, you want an answer on a detail. But somehow or another, that answer should be absolute.
Absolutely.
That it finds any situation.
Yeah.
Like that. It's very, but if you give an absolute answer, then I've had ones where you say that and I've been told that the question is, you know, it's not clear,
right.
You know, or something like that, you know, be more specific. So then you have to bring it down to the detail. You have to, like Prabhupada did. The guy who was arguing, and Prabhupada kept saying, and you know, I'll try to understand, and this and that, and kept arguing like this. So Prabhupada just leaned forward, you know, and the guy started, you know, was he going to say something? He leaned forward, Prabhupada reached across, grabbed him by the scruff of his neck, or not the scruff, the collar, and dragged him across the table until his nose was right for the problem. Then he explained it again very succinctly. And then the guy just nodded his head and probably let go. So, yeah. He was like, hey, could I do that?
That's when prophets had
this. Yeah. Child can say anything. Old man can do anything. So it says, you're too young, you can't do that. No one likes that. But that's the time. Yeah, so see, we're bringing in, you're trying to get to this higher understanding of what logic is, but through the mechanics and the details, because we don't have anything else. Right, we have to go from our situation to introducing new knowledge. We have to connect it with what we know. So, because it's mechanical, we'll connect it with some kind of mechanics we know. But at the same time, we have to be connecting it with the conclusions or the philosophy that actually is the purpose of it. If you do those simultaneously, you'll get somewhere. But that's why we're saying, is you use this modern rhetoric, no one will get there. It's impossible. How will they get there? You know, an individual themselves may work it out and take advantage of it and use it nicely for Krishna, but that is their individual understanding. You can't say it was anything to do with the course. Does that make sense? Like that. You can't claim that. Because the course has to show its connection to Krishna and show how these mechanics work in conjunction with understanding Krishna. And then how you in your position could apply these to, therefore, please Krishna. Then it goes together. Otherwise, then you'll miss the point. Does that make sense? So there's always something deeper. And this is with any of them, even in grammar, like Harinamrita Vyakarana. Jiva Goswami says all the grammar is explaining for Krishna. It's all philosophy. It's just philosophy in the form of grammar, or philosophy in the form of logic, philosophy in the form of medicine. You know what I'm saying? It's just, that's all it is. It's like what Krishna's done and who he is in the form of drama. So that's it. Is each one is just, if Krishna's existence, that means how existence is set up is Him. You study that mechanically, that's called Stapana Veda. You know, you have Vastu and all those things, but it's how Krishna sets things up.
I think that therefore, back in the day when they had these different degrees in the old universities, if you had theology degrees, it was supposed to be higher than...
Yes.
Because of this point, people could actually see how it connects to Krishna, all these other things that open up to Krishna.
Yes,
not
yes.
Not necessarily if you're a lawyer or a doctor.
Yes, yes, exactly. Exactly. That's what it should be. That's what it should be. And so that's then would be the ideal. I'm sure in it, in teaching the theology, they show it in context of law and medicine, you know, and other things. And when they're, but it would be emphasized on the theology. While they're learning law and medicine, it would be predominantly that, but it would also show Shama the higher. You know, it's just like the Apara Vidya. It does tell the philosophy, but it's not the main thing. It shows you the connections, but it's understood as you should already know the philosophy. Then when you see it, you'll see the connections. Or if not, you'll have to go back. But the philosophy then directly gives, and it gives some reference in how it goes back. Like you see, it's showing an astrological chart of Krishna's appearance and explaining different things and how what all that means in the unit. You know, it's appeared on, you know, what do you call it, you know, the eighth day, but then because he's in the Yadu dynasty, therefore the moon was so happy, he's full. And, you know, all these different things is showing all this connection to Krishna. So that's what the astronomy and astrology is for, to see things in the context of Krishna. It's not just to figure out when's the best time to get married, or when I'm going to make lots of money, or, you know, things like that. When my enemies will be destroyed. I mean, you can find out these things, but the point is that's not actually what it's for. You know, it's just like the frying pan. You can whack somebody up the side of the head with it, or you can use it to hold down your newspaper while you read the comics. Did you used to call them funnies?
Funnies, yeah.
Yeah. Just see how what I know, if it's only regional or is it more inclusive?
I mean,
yes.
The Sunday funnies were in color, whereas the
yes.
daily funnies were just in black.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
National tree on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. That's always because kids always wake up earlier than adults. Because the younger kids, they get to the funnies first. I think that's probably why they, at least in our newspapers, they used to print them separately. They would be printed in their own thing, but they would be put inside the bigger one. But they weren't part of the folds of the bigger one. That way the kids could take it out and make a complete mess of it, or even lose it, and it wouldn't disturb the adults. Well, if it had been an integral part, the kids would have pulled those out and this and that. Yeah, so I'm sure in the originally it wasn't like that, because on the weekdays, in the black and white, then it's just one of the pages. It's not an insert. But it's very small, and it's in black and white. And a lot of them are dropped off, so more. You know, you need to have a few for the kids, more the intellectual ones are there and stuff.
We used to get in trouble if we had a school project, we'd have to, you know, clip something out of the newspaper and write an article. So if we did that before Dad read the newspaper, whatever was on that back of what we just cut out just happened to be exactly what he needed to read. We'd get in trouble, we already glued it down to the paper, so he couldn't just pick it up and read the rest.
What we do is glue it onto a piece of white paper and hold it up to
hold it up and read it. Yeah, but then you see both sides.
Oh yeah, that's
you have to try to decipher it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, these are details of how the material energy.
Keeps us deep.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have the kids, you can peacefully read the newspaper, but then after you read the newspaper, then, you know, what's the purpose of your whole life? You know? So therefore you have the kids, but then you can't read the newspaper, so. Yeah. I thought you were going to say that you clip out the funnies and do them and make your whole article on that. That would be a thing, is take one of those ones and do a whole, like a political explanation of this whole thing, of what's going on there. And that would probably get you an A+, if you did it well.
I remember that when the Alex had the like Jubilees 50 or 60, they would, it was long ago, they would make a big poster with photos, and real photos of the one who had the birthday, like that serious birthday, like 50 or not like 50 bucks.
Okay.
And then they, because they, there was no printers as such, I suppose, they would cut the words from the newspaper and make the whole thing in like poems and articles.
Okay.
From this, that's what I remember as a kid.
Right.
You know, and everybody would go and read it, like seriously read the whole thing. I remember my mom did for her dad, my grandfather.
Right.
It was such a big success because she made the whole thing. I think it took her 1 month to do it or something.
It's only words, it's also pictures.
Pictures and words, and
so,
because
so it's
was
a bit of a collage.
It was a collage, yeah, and it was different font types.
Okay.
It was different newspapers and the journals she used and everything. So it was, as a kid, that's what I remember. That's how you used
the newspaper. Between a collage and a ransom note.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They also, probably some of the relatives, they wrote something.
And
also. Okay. Because when you said about the extended family of Jews also,
so
people.
All
those had their own relationships. And
okay.
That was my grandfather, and he was like head
of
the clan.
Okay.
So, made for him, I think he was 50 by then.
Okay.
That's how the newspaper
would be. Yeah, how the newspaper, okay. That's good. Yeah.
And they stored the thing.
Oh, yeah, no, that goes in the attic. Goes in the attic and with everything else.
They didn't have an attic, but they were stored somewhere. Mm. Because
they you make a hole, you go up and make a hole and you go into the neighbor's attic.
They also
didn't
have that.
Oh, okay.
Had
the third bedroom.
How do you divide your one big room into two smaller rooms? You just make a wall of a stack of newspaper.
Yeah, that would do it. That too. But generally, that's what the you do have that, I think. But it's also quite common when old people who live alone, they end up doing that. So
save all their bottle caps and
everything.
That was the probably the Amazon boxes.
Yeah.
Some people save them.
Some people save their nail clippings.
Really? For what?
Wow.
I don't know.
That's ridiculous.
That's weird.
I know.
I've never seen that.
Because one of the kinds of paisachas eat nails. That's why you don't cut nails inside. You have to cut it in, you know, it's already a dirty place, like in the bathroom and the drains, or go outside. You can't cut it in where you're using it because those guys hang out there.
So I also heard, I don't know if this one's true, but I heard it a few times, is that if you accidentally, you know, don't pick up a nail, but you clip something, then wherever that place is, someone will steal something.
That's also that. Probably that's true. Because I think they went and cut the nails out in the backyard, but under where the lines were for hanging clothes, that was something that, you know, wherever you do, they'll steal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I think they took Prophet Stone. But it wasn't a problem, because I think the next day or the day after that, then you saw some of the fired up Brahmacharis sitting in the front of the class wearing Prabhupada's dhoti or Prabhupada's clothes. Because they thought it was Maha. You know, Prabhupada worn it, it's put outside, it's, you know, and they took it, they put it on, so probably just laughed. So they didn't understand it, that he's still using them. They thought, oh, it's Maha. You know, so.
We had the policy where, you know, everybody wanted to take the guru's socks. So we had the policy, if you're going to take his socks, you have to give him another new pair, and it has to be of at least equal quality.
You know, not that
bad. Yeah, because otherwise, you know, everybody kept stealing his socks, and it's not like, you know, you have a job, you get to buy more. So people were taking his nice socks and trying to get him, or try to get his socks. One time, a fellow here wanted to get him new shoes. So he had these Birkenstocks, but they were old.
Right.
But they were good, you know, it's a Birkenstock.
Yeah, of course.
So this Indian fellow said, Maharaj, I want to buy you new shoes. And Maharaj is trying to politely explain that, you know, if you just go to the wall, none of those shoes are going to be comfortable. And he understood that when whoever buys a new shoe, they want his old one. So he's just trying to be polite about it, but it, you know, like, kind of put me in a strange situation, you know.
She was objecting because he was writing in his book about the slippers she was probably used just to go to the bathroom. That's the only thing that he used them for. And they were standing outside, and he saw them. He found exactly the same pair, and they waited to probably use those ones and then put the new ones, and Prabhupada was not happy at all about it, even though their shoes were exactly the same. And he demanded the old ones and said, "You shouldn't do that, because you're cheating on your group."
Yeah, because it has to be something. Another thing was, Prabhupada has a little bag, small bag, like a satchel. He always carried with him. You know, you see so many pictures when he's, you know, traveling, going on the plane, or that he has that in his hand. It would be like today, I don't know about today, but before, I've seen it a few years back, where you have the computer case, you know, that has the two loop handles that you grab. It would be like that, but it would have had more zippers and more things inside. It wasn't for a computer. So Prabhupada had that and all his papers and everything important that he always kept with him. He carried that. So someone else, they wanted to get, you know, they sang at the Maha, so then they got one. And they came and, you know, discussed with Prabhupada about it. Prabhupada was not convinced because it won't be as good as the one he has, and he knows it. And so it was quite a discussion before it was found out that what he got was, I guess, from what I understand, quite good. And so that everything Prabhupada wanted was in that and that. And so only after that, he put everything in, saw that it worked like that, okay, then he got it. So, you know, there was a lot of bargaining. He had to really sell it, you know. Okay. The first premise states a positive fact. The second premise states the reason for this assertion. The third premise then confirms the relation between the reason for the assertion and the asserted fact itself, by, as supported by a well-known example. Right? So that means the first one is there. The second one is a reason for that first one. The third one then connects the second and the first one through a well-known means at least it has to be to the person that you're talking to. The fourth constituent of the syllogism represents the application of the universal proposition to the present case. You know, the fifth part or conclusion is drawn from the preceding fourth parts. Right, so it has to include, as Prabhu was mentioning, it includes all the other elements to it. It has to have that. But its application is having that as brought together and how it applies into the situation. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a mechanical application. It means how what we're saying in the pratigya and the reason and all that, how that's applied to this situation or case or doubt that someone else may have. You know? Does that make sense? They have a doubt, so they don't see how what you're saying applies to them. You've shown its practical application.
So, that's usually the fourth part of the dishtanta. This is where he's supposed to get it.
Yes. Means basically you can say he's gotten the point you've made, but he still doesn't necessarily see how it applies to what he's saying. Mm. The fourth one, now you make it practically applicable to what they say. So that's why in the modern, because he said that at least three parts, you know, a thesis, antithesis, and what, synthesis. So the fourth one is the synthesis. Like that. Because the whole point is he said, you defeated him, but the point is just defeating him isn't actually the purpose. That's also the difference, because then in Jalpa and Vitanda, that they're only winning the argument. But you're actually supposed to, the other person come to the point of Dishtanta and understand what you said. That's what vada is for. You know, or something that they've said, now you understand. You know, or a combination. But the point is you're trying to understand it. So that's why the other two, that's why rhetoric is, basically you only use rhetoric if you're dealing with people that don't have any brain. So by defeating them, sometimes they become, what do you call it, more inquisitive. Or at least then they leave you alone, and others who are more inquisitive will be inspired. But otherwise, it's not actually so useful. Does that make sense? So if you follow the thing that you're trying to come to truth and conclusion, you know, through the proper siddhanta, truth meaning siddhanta, then vada will bring out all the arguments and all that. It will give you the answers. You don't have to have these tricky techniques. You know, it's like, what was it, that special rhetoric, I think it was with Biden. Was it Trump and Biden? Where every time they say, you know, they ask Trump, okay, well, what do you say? Because he was already the president. So then, okay, what do you see on this point? And then he speaks his whole thing. Then they turn to Biden, the mediator, right? You know, okay, well, what do you say? And as soon as he started talking, Trump would talk. Anything he said. And it was so that, you know, so then we're going to do this. I said, if you can do this, you guys never do anything. It's just, but, you know, like this. Or it came to the point where he would just talk over and talk about it. It wasn't even discussing what he was saying. It wasn't like sentence for sentence or something. It was just, he just started talking. So it is a technique of rhetoric, but it wasn't necessarily appreciated by those with a more intellectual capacity. You know, it did the job, you know, that he won the debate, but it didn't impress anybody with the brain. But at the same time, as maybe Trump was thinking that Biden doesn't have a brain, so therefore what's the point? So then who knows what was the reason that it was.
So technically this should be used as a way to establish a relationship personally.
Yes, but based on authority, based on the absolute. So it's not just about the relationship, it's you're discussing the absolute but in the context of a relationship. So it should be yes, that you have a deeper understanding. But I don't, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because otherwise if you have better arguments here, you have time to accept them. If you don't get at least some level of relationship, personal.
Yes, personal relationship. But that's based on the relationship with Krishna. Because otherwise we won't have anything solid. Because anything material can always change. Yeah. If it's based on Krishna consciousness, then no matter what adjustments happen in the material nature, then that relationship based on the relationship with Krishna can continue. The essence of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, unless it's false.
Yeah. So you don't want to. So politicians will do these things to establish either relationships or to get rid of. They don't want, you know, so they get used, or they use to the, you know, show that they're there to who's in what position. Like I was saying, it was something like. Like I've heard about it. I think someone was explaining it. It was, I can't remember who, maybe it was Kavichandra Maharaj in Japan. They go and there's always this thing, you have to establish the hierarchy. They don't know how to function until they've done that. So we have chit-chat just to chit-chat to kind of be pleasant or like this. Their chit-chat is to figure out what level the other guy's at, what level are you at. And so, you know, there'll be standard questions, standard kind of answers until they understand, okay, you're senior to me, I'm senior to you, we're equals. Then once that's there, then they know how to bow, how to do, and then everything, then they actually start their conversation. Because otherwise they can't function. You know, so you have to establish.
In America, everybody just assumes they're superiors. It's a matter of the government contact. It just turns into every conversation trying to prove you wrong.
Yeah. That's true.
And they say everything is universal.
Of course.
Universal. I mean, that was really surprising.
Well, it's just it's a.
But it's funny.
It is. But the funny part is because they do it with such confidence, most people, as long as they're not doing something that'll be a real disturbance, most people go along with it, because who wants to disturb the guy who has such a big false ego and so confident about it? You know, so it's like, it's just like, let's say them and a European. It's like, if what they're saying, it would work, they would do it some another way, but it'll work. Why have an argument with this guy? You know, but if they're saying something that doesn't match, then that's... So the only ones that I think that never appreciated that were the French, because I think they have bigger false ego. Yeah, because it's like after World War II, then I think De Gaulle, you know, they wanted to have, at that time, set up kind of like a NATO thing or some kind of thing and all that, and America or that, and then they all said, no, we have nothing to do with it. We're doing our own thing. So he didn't want to have anything to do with that, because it's like, you know, so with the big false ego is always disturbed by someone else with the big false ego. You know, so.
They also don't know English, so they don't
understand
each other. They don't speak French. They do it
purposely. Okay. To gain a proper understanding of the workings of logic, it is necessary to examine more closely how a systematic syllogism functions, right? So the workings, but we have to know also what's the purpose. So that's why then it said before, Siddhanta, Krishna says in Gita, Siddhanta is the actual purpose of it. So the workings, then if you know, okay, I have to get to Siddhanta, then you're going to look at the other 15 padarthas, you know, the elements, in the context of how they support Siddhanta. So that's why then the Jalpa and the Vitanda, then then you have Nigrahasana, of course, because no one even knows what they're talking about, so what's there, then Jati, then
Chala.
So it's just those three means. Those five elements you want to kind of avoid, because they're not really useful, you know, unless it's a situation in which you can't come to the situation. You've said it, no one can understand it. You might use those things to kind of just brush it aside. So then that means then the other 11, the other 10, how they support coming to a conclusion. So, yeah. For this purpose, the following example may be reanalyzed. Oh, okay, now we come to this one. There is fire on the hill because there is smoke. Where there is smoke, there is fire. As was previously discussed, fire is the major term, hill the minor term, smoke the middle term. The middle term, smoke, is so called because on one hand it is connected to the minor term, hill, and on the other hand it is universally related to the major term, fire. Right? So that's the thing, is the middle term has to be in detail connected with the minor, but in the universal has to be connected to the major.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. Not that they're connected, because that can be a mistake in logic. It's connected, but if it's not universal, it doesn't apply.
So the major is the priority. Because you
want to
prove that there's fire.
Yeah, but what you're doing is the major and the minor will be connected. The smoke is only used as the medium. Right? You're trying to establish that you have the minor, which is the hill, but the major is the fire. So there's fire on the hill. But you're doing that through smoke, because there's smoke on the hill. It's connected with that, but smoke is also connected to fire as a universal principle. So therefore, if there's smoke, then there must be fire.
So the local connects to the universal.
Yes, yes. You're connecting the local to the universal. But the smoke, the middle term, is the medium for that. Yeah.
Application.
Yes. So it's a very simple thing, but the detail of this, you know, can have so much fine points that are brought out, and because of that, you know, what is the, you know, how to define the term exactly, and what is useful, you know, like that. Does that make sense?
It's like a pool.
Yeah, you know, like the smoke is on the hill, and trees grow on the hill, therefore smoke is a hill. I mean, smoke is a tree. You know, and so it means you're misapplying it here, because it has to know what it means, you know, or, you know, so, you know, Does that make sense? Because, like you said, where there's smoke, there's fire. But where there's fire, there doesn't have to be smoke. You can have a smokeless fire. Mm-hmm. Like that. So, therefore, it's not universal. It means you can't reverse it. Where there's fire, there's smoke, that's universal. But where there's smoke, there's fire. That's not universal. So you also have to know, you have to use the universal one. So that's the easier one, because they have terms for it that applies one way or two ways.
Equivalent. If they apply both.
Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah. Because you hear these terms, and people that know the terms are speaking them as if they're common knowledge, but you know, you have no idea what they're talking about. Hopefully by the end of this course, then it will be more obvious. And you will know the terms, and you can speak with confidence and all these things, and other people go, wow, that's good. And actually, you just memorized some words.
Fancy words. Fancy words.
Yes, some fancy words.
Another example of that concept of one can go one way but not the other way is that all squares are considered rectangles, but not all rectangles are considered squares.
Yes.
Because the definition of a square is that the angles are the same, but for rectangles, just that the angles are the same and it has four sides. For squares, it's the angles are the same and the sides are the same.
Yes.
So the part of the definition is there.
Yes, exactly.
So it exists, but it can't go backwards.
Yes, exactly. So that's why you have to use a universal one.
Right.
So a lot of times you can catch people because they're not using the universal. So that's where they're using. They're using like a jockey. They're using it as a group. It goes together. You know, so they're rectangles, so they try to push the rectangle.
Everybody has to be group.
Yes.
Then females and I think that's the point.
Yes.
It's making the universal point out of something minor.
Yes, it's not that. And at the same time, it's in that conversation, Lord Chaitanya is talking about children also. But no one's, is anybody pushing for children gurus? They can, but we could make a real case out of it because it is our sampradaya. Because the Madhvas, they take sannyas when they're, you know, whenever it is, 5-6 years old, they're guru. You know, they have to be trained, but you respect and deal. Means a 5-year-old with a danda walks down the path, these 60-year-old pandit grihasthas are offering obeisances. So therefore, hey, you know, what about children being good? Who?
I mean, they become gurus immediately.
Yeah. Kids
can become gurus, so that's why we don't have any system where kids.
Yeah, just avoid that. So what I'm saying is, it's like you said, they're taking specific, they're not using the universal. Because if you're saying everybody becomes guru, then, okay, well, how does everyone become guru? Because we see is that, okay, Jiva Goswami explains diksha. There's that verse, something diksha-dikshati, something like this. It means that it's the siksha.
Yeah, it's a transmission of transcendental knowledge.
Yeah, so therefore that means everybody should be giving transcendental knowledge to whoever they meet. So it's talking about a universal. So siksha is universal, not diksha. And then, so they're one already. They're taking a minor aspect of the term. It's not universal. And then, like you're saying, then they're applying it into a particular group that's even more minor. And then, in this way, it's not logical argument. Very good. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki.